You're listening to Health First, heard across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We are back with Christian Smith, author of The Scientist and the Psychic. And we've been talking about psychic abilities and how it works and how you know. So if we all have a little bit of psychic ability and we can train ourselves through meditation, that would even starting off in that direction would help us have the awareness or the knowing if people were actually the real deal in being psychic.
True. The other trick, not trick, I guess, is the other method to trusting your own intuition is actually to voice it and to acknowledge it. So my mom spent a very long time trying to teach other people to become their own best psychic. And along with meditation, she tried to give awareness to people as to why her abilities flourish, whereas others are just emerging. And one of those has to do with sort of a programming. We're taught from a very young age that it's just our imagination, or that anything that happens that we think is going to happen is a coincidence. And we kind of learn that if it shuts it down, and we kind of learn that those things are wrong to believe in. And so if we actually start to trust that intuition, it'll happen more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the biggest takeaway, is for people to really, you know, listen to their inner voice, because whatever it is, there's a filter in our brain that maybe not as is relaxed in my mother and other sensitives. So if we can expand our filter to get that other information in, wherever it's coming from, then, you know, we're in a better situation to be intuitive of on our own.
Mm-hmm. Did you ask your grandmother when she first saw this intuitive ability with her daughter?
So my mom had it she had a few dreams. So it started initially as dreams that came true. And she was very frightened. So my mom got married at 16 and had me at 19. And then the real experiences started shortly after I was born. And that manifested by seeing, you know, spirits that weren't there. And so she got fairly heavily into the spiritualist movement because of my grandmother. My mom was very close to committing suicide because of what was happening to her, and my grandmother helped her get connected to a psychiatrist who then said, you know, I'm doing some work in ESP and this might be of benefit to you. So thankfully my grandmother was, you know, right there holding my mother up. Otherwise I probably wouldn't be here today.
Right. Wow. Wow, that's amazing, because, I mean, we're getting much more aware of all these things, but back in the day when you were young, and even when your mom was young, you might be called a witch, or, you know, rather than a wise woman. There could be a lot of people who think that it's...
She said if it had been 100 years earlier, she would have been burnt at the stake.
Yes.
And, in fact, your words were exactly the words that happened on the schoolyard. I had kids, you know, yelling, your mom is a witch. And I guess because the parents and teachers had seen the newspapers and commented around the dinner table or something. So they seemed to know what was being reported.
And they didn't realize that was just a very wise woman using her gifts.
Yeah, and also it was hard. She was a young female going into the professional world, and I mean, back in the 70s and 50s, she was a pioneer, and not just in, you know, in the business world as a self, you know, employed woman, but as a, you know, a psychic that was gaining rapid international repute.
And she worked with the detectives and with the police force to help with crimes as well.
Exactly. It was her lifelong dream. So she wanted to actually stop readings. Like I said, she doesn't think we need psychics. So she wanted to stop readings altogether, teach people to do it for themselves. But her true passion was in helping in criminal investigations. So she was very interested in anyone that had missing children, that kind of scenario, whether they be runaways or whether they be abductions. She was always on hand for that. And in fact, she gave up her career in 1979. She was making lots of money doing readings, but she gave all that up to go and volunteer in the United States, in California. She worked on two major cases there, which was the Los Angeles freeway murders. There was a young boy who was missing. The body was missing, and they weren't sure he was a victim, but they involved my mom in the body recovery. And the other one was on the defense team of the Fatal Vision murderer, Jeff McDonald. So she, and that's where things, you know, when you immerse yourself into that dark world, it really takes a toll.
Now, is I can only imagine, you know, spending days in that kind of knowing and understanding what's gone on and who's been involved. Do you think that was part of the helplessness going into addiction? Like, how could that have been helped using her gifts and supported so that she had the nourishment not to have to use to get rid of the feelings?
Yeah, she in her diaries and from those days and from when I talked with her in those Sunday morning meetings, she described her visions and what it was she experienced. So it wasn't, she was actually experiencing it with the victim. So she would feel the pain herself.
Oh.
And that's where it really became scary. Like, I can't imagine that. Like, a true, you know, a gifted psychic will have to, you know, if they're just learning, they're feeling all these things. They have to be able to try to separate themselves. And one of the things that my mom turned to was trying to numb things with alcohol and so forth, which led her down to a more addictive path. But you're absolutely right. Like, experiencing these, there has to be some sort of a way, mechanisms that they train themselves to handle what they're seeing and feeling and hearing.
Because she lived every trauma. I mean, trauma is a gateway drug to addiction. You can't go through all those traumas without something.
Yeah, but on the flip side of it, she felt buoyed by the parents that she was helping, because one of the things that she's always said to me is that when a parent comes to her, the same sentiment is, living or dead, I just want to know. And that it would just, she felt that if she could offer them some sort of a perspective that handled that grief and handled that, then she said it was all worth it.
Wow. So it was her responsibility and the knowing to have to share
it. It was a calling. Like I tried to figure out, what is it about her that made her into the psychic she was? Like, you said earlier, was it hereditary? And we have had people in our past that have had, you know, so-called psychic abilities, but you can't quantify them the way I have with my mother.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered, you know, is there anything special about her childhood? And the long story short is, there wasn't any one particular thing that you can point to as being that moment that opened up her abilities, other than that my grandmother had always instilled into her that anything is possible. So she grew up believing in her dreams, and she obviously pursued them.
Yeah, so she wasn't put down by the things she was hearing and learning, and she was able to share it.
Yeah, just for example, like, you know how sometimes when children play with imaginary friends, sometimes parents are a little bit uncomfortable with that and will try to correct it. But my grandmother just let her, you know, let her imagination run wild.
And so the science behind it now, connecting the science of the spirit world, can you actually quantify that now through science?
So that is one of the conflicts that runs through the book, because I, as a scientist, don't believe that there's an afterlife. And obviously my mother does. A chunk of the book was me to try to see if I could measure that phenomena. And that's when I went down. So there's one, like I mentioned, the Virginia site down in Charlottesville, Virginia. The lab there studies a number of phenomena that's related to the afterlife, including near-death experiences and children that have memories of past lives, so essentially looking at reincarnation. And the cases are, you know, phenomenally researched and backed up, but they're still, as most scientific reports of psychic phenomena, it remains as anecdotal, so that there's no way to quantify it where the bulk of the scientists will say, oh, yes, you're on the right track. That's where this field has been challenged until we get better tools to study.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I suggested maybe bringing in the tools that we do have, like functional MRI, to get some start line kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the science will come along. I don't think it's, I don't know about the afterlife, because I have, for me, it's going to be, and I think for most people, it's going to be a personal belief system that they need proof for themselves. Because for me, it's seeing is believing, and believe me, I put myself in as many situations as I can, including seances, mediums, to try to see that for myself, but it has not transpired as of yet. But the science of her abilities, which I do, I have dug into, and I do think that there is an explanation for the brain being able to, in sensitive such as my mother, lower that filter that everyone else has in place, because we don't need to see, hear, and smell everything around us to survive.
Yeah.
Right? So we filter out a lot of that information. So I'm hypothesizing that in sensitives such as my mother, that filter has been lowered, and they have access to other information.
Christian, what's your calling in this planet, on this life journey?
For me, and it's funny you should mention that, maybe you have some psychic abilities yourself. I was just talking about that yesterday. So by day, I work in a brain tumor research facility, and so that's what I'm studying, is pediatric brain tumors. So my calling is to see work that we've done in the bench, so in the lab, get translated to patient care. And we are just now working on a clinical trial to work on the one tumor in children. It's called a brainstem tumor called DIPG that is inoperable and is 100% fatal. And we are now just we have drafted a proposal, and it's going through research ethics to start in the fall, which is my dream before I can ever retire, is to see something that we've worked on in the lab brought to patient therapy and treatment in a clinical trial.
Wow. Well, thank you very much for taking a creative time out to write this book, The Scientist and the Psychic. It's available, it's through Penguin, and available on Amazon and in bookstores. So I want to thank you for the creativity and the amazing stories and following your mother's life. It's a real blessing to anybody who wants to pick it up and have a really good read. So thanks for being on our show today as well.
And thank you, Kathy. Take care. I hear you have some rough weather coming your way in the next
few
days.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much, Christian.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back.